Why? I asked him. That means another kilometer.
We of these parts hardly use the path now,
was his answer.
Don't you go that way.
With a certain earnestness and admonition. What, wolves about here? I asked him. He lowered his voice to say,
You may see someone named La Mère Gouvion.
As if to say,
You may see Beelzebub.
I suppose that he meant a ghost, and as I knew something of southern superstitiousness, and was in a hurry, I handed him a franc and went on by the forest path. I found it in some parts choked with bush, myrtle, kerms oak, which I had to part before me, and by the moonshine above the bush I saw in that short distance two of those mounds named barrows, placed there by the fairies. Then, when I had tramped 3 kilometers through a rather intolerable solitude, the shock came. 3 meters to my left, within a sort of clearing, I saw the woman. She was seated on a fragment of one of those rocks they call menhirs. I had the impression in the hazy moonshine that she was moving her shoulders slowly from side to side, her hands supporting her jaw. Some grace in the fall of her rag suggesting a statue set on a pedestal. Her stature, I could see, was gigantic. Her great arms like clubs, her great bosom and spread of shoulder, her mouth open in a cavern of darkness that looked oblong, her hair black and gray, a tangle of snakes. And as I walked past, her eyes followed me. With that kind of gaze with which an ox stops cropping to gaze after a passer. The image of this woman filled my mind until I got to Cognac, near 9, and that same night, while sitting in an inn garden with swings, ninepins, arbors, I was told by my host the story of La Mère Gouvion. She came, he told me, of a well-to-do family, who owned land on the far side of Lebrun-les-Brières, her father being a mighty big man, known as a hard bargainer as far as Avignon and Orange, and in Lebrun everybody feared him.
Even the curé,
for it was said that he did not believe in the good God. He drank 0.5 liter of cognac every night, so that one could hear him marching up and down his veranda to a late hour, quarrelling with nobody, and carrying on. Terrible he was when the drink had him, like a man mad with sunstroke. And one summer, when the phylloxera had rotted his vine leaves and things were looking bad for harvest, on an awful night long remembered, he raised his hand, defied the heavens to do their worst, and challenged the bell of Saint-Sepulchre to ring in his hearing, for the bell was said to be a little audible from his yard. His wife ran to hide under a bed, dreading the bell toll. His daughter Maud herself trembled. Some had it to say that the bell did ring in his hearing. However that was, he perished shortly afterwards in convulsions and was buried without the blessing of the church. Soon after him, his good woman also passed away, and Maud Gouvion was left mistress of all. And now things began to look alive indeed. If the patch of yellowish moss appeared on all the vines of the parish, Maud Gouvignon's trellises were still green. Maud's spray and pruning scissors should no doubt have accounted for this prosperity. But there were those who thought of black magic when the mulberry disease and the failure of the madder crop, which were the cry all round, seemed to keep clear of her fields. The truth was that her man roiled for her with the consciousness of her hard eyes behind them, for she was more masterful than any man, and moreover, she covered her land with a newfangled sort of sandy stuff from Marseille, so that the next vintage, 60 barrels of light wine rolled off in her cart to Avignon, as against La Père Gouvignon's maximum of 53. Meanwhile, no one could stand the sight of her passions. If anything went wrong, as when she threw big Huguenot, the blacksmith, down some stairs for laming a mule in shoeing.